The world's two best podcasters have reunited, Tom McCaffrey and Danny Palmer. What's up, bro?
What's up, bro? How you doing?
Good, dude. Are you making fun of me? Are you mocking my surfer style of speech?
What's up, bro?
No, people would always make fun of me for having that. That's what people comment about my speech style, that I sounded like a valley girl.
Yeah, you and I are similar in that regard. Like, what's up, dude?
Yeah, I used to do. Yeah, people used to. Yeah, I have a weird voice. I know everyone suffers from that thing where they hate the sound of their voice. Do you have that? I feel like
my voice is so mellifluous that I'm just widely beloved, including by myself.
But when you hear your voice, are you like, is it? Do you cringe or do you like it?
I like it. I think I have a pretty good voice.
That's weird.
I don't like what I...
Because I feel like other people cringe. No, I'm just kidding.
Really? When I listen to my sets, I'm like, oh, Jesus, Danny. Why do you keep saying like so much? Or why are you talking so fast? Like, I get irritated at some of the things that I do when I speak, but the actual sound of my voice, I think it's pretty good.
Okay.
How do you feel about your voice?
I don't like it at all. I really... When I listen to it, I just am not... I'm like kind of mortified that that's how people are hearing me.
I feel like if I'm performing at a comedy club, if I speak directly into the mic, that my voice can like fill the room pretty well. So I feel like that's good, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not like,
hi, everybody. Hey, man.
You know?
Yeah. No, you don't talk like a Jewish
like a
grandmother.
Fucking mouse.
What's going on? So I have my book is out now. Everyone, please go buy it. That's my.
I got to read it. I got to buy it and read it. Tell everybody about your book.
It's called Born Funny: A Comics Chronicle Through the Rise of Alt Comedy, and it's a novel, sort of an autobiographical novel. So it's based on my. Actual experiences, starting out doing stand-up comedy and getting involved in like the alt scene that would, they kind of grew into this thing in the aughts, and kind of, so it's kind of like one person's journey through comedy and also during an era that became like a very important, impactful comedy era later. You know what I mean? That kind of launched a new generation of comedians and stars. Kind of, so it's kind of both. It's like an origin story of a comedian, and also while he's in the midst of this kind of interesting era of comedy, starting with a bunch of people who would later on become like, the biggest people in comedy later. So, yeah.
So you put yourself as the protagonist? What?
Has a lot of celeb cameos before, actually it has a few celeb cameos like while they're famous, but also a lot before they're famous. And it's sort of Forrest Gumpish, which in that I'm around for, a lot of the, and I witnessed like a lot of the like most impactful, important comedy moments and pivotal. And also my character, the character it's based on me is pivotal in making a lot of comedic moments or huge pop culture iconic moments happen.
That was gonna be my question. Like, you're the autobiographical protagonist, but you're fictional, but the other characters are real, and that it's like Janine Garofalo or something like that.
Yeah, it has real people in it, but some of them are like an amalgamation of of different people into one character, and lot of names are changed. Some of the names aren't changed. Basically, if I said anything maybe not that flattering, I changed their name.
Yeah.
But anyone whose name I use, there's nothing bad about them. It's just my interaction with them. And it's not made up. Like the interactions are basically true. There's just maybe not exactly, things maybe didn't transpire exactly how they do in the book, but it's kind of like the best of my recollection, that's how it happened.
Who's somebody that's real that you didn't change their name of?
Jack Nicholson.
Did you meet Jack Nicholson?
Yeah, I met Jack Nicholson at the Oscars.
Oh, that's right. When you're just a tyke.
Yeah, so that's kind of where it starts, which is kind of supposed to show that that's where, like the big, the protagonist kind of gets his first bite of showbiz, and it's kind of like an addiction from then on, that he can't let go of. So it's basically, and there's a scene where I meet Jack Nicholson, and I make a comment, like an offhanded comment, and it shapes like a decision that he makes later on. It's like I'm basically the catalyst for why he does the movie Batman. That's basically.
Wow, it sounds like it's a really humble book.
Well, I just think it's funny that, you know, when I was writing it, I was going to do a lot of, you know, kind of insidey references to things that would happen later, you know. But I thought it'd be funny if not only would you make a reference, but also be that I was the one that made it happen in a way that affected the trajectory of huge pop culture moments, kind of, you know, like how Forrest Gump did, but all, you know, kind of like not on purpose, kind of like unintentionally make, like, I basically tell, and then, you know, and also I say, he makes a comment about, you know, I'm 10, and he's like, oh, what kind of movies do you like? And I'm like, I like superhero movies. And he's like, and I'm like, they should make more. And he's like, oh, they're not going to do that.
You just make Jack Nicholson an idiot and you're the star.
Well, it's supposed to be in Hollywood, superhero movies weren't big at that time. Like, they were making, when they came out with a superhero movie back in the 80s, it was like a huge deal, but didn't happen all the time. It was like once every 2 or 3 years, there'd be a superhero movie. Now it's just every movie is a superhero movie.
Yeah. Can we go back to those pre-loser days?
Yeah. I mean, in the 80s, it was definitely getting worse. Like, the movies weren't as good, but it was right. It was that era had still just happened with like the 60s and the 70s, where the directors were kind of in charge of the movies and they would just give them free rein to make good. Like, I saw an interview, I think, with Dustin Hoffman recently. He said that, you know, in the late 60s, it was basically when directors were just like, we're going to make this thing and we don't really know what it is, but we're going to try and make something really good instead of being like, well, this better make money. You know what I mean? It was like, we're just going to make something that we think is really good. And studios were like open to that. Like, yeah, you guys are good. Like, make something good. Now they're like, I don't give a shit if it's good. Like, is it going to make money?
Right. The ROI has to be baked in at the outside or else they're not going to fund it. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so it's not really, how can you really have any artistic freedom if it's just basically like, well, this better make my money back. And if you have that hanging over your head, that's not really, you're not really doing art. You're just kind of, that's business, completely business.
Yeah, that's more like the Duplass brothers model of movie making, right? Which I love their movies, but they're not going to be like, you know, Avatar 2.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, they don't want to be. They didn't, you know, they, yeah, I read their book and they talk about that, how they had some buzz early on and they would go to all these meetings and stuff with producers and Hollywood people and they'd be like, yeah, we're interested. And then it wouldn't go anywhere. So they were just like, you know what? We're just going to make our own things without any money. So they had this rule of, you know, they were saying like, if you want to do a short film, just make it for like, I think it's something like $50 or something, like something really low budget.
Like on your phone.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but you know, that makes sense. And it's even more so now, because when they started, you couldn't do that, right? You couldn't just, you didn't have iPhones, but they even did it without the technology you have now. They were just like, I'm doing it. Fuck it. I'm not waiting for some fucking studio person or whatever to give me a shot. And I don't even know, you know, they've been at it for a while. I don't even know what that business is anymore. You know, they're fucking in free fall. They don't even know what they're doing in that business. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This so is they're like, not gonna, go what? Ahead. I was just going to say, so they're definitely not going to take chances on anyone new now. Like, they, you know, the people who are established and doing great are fucking can't get, like, there's some movie, someone just, like Mark Wahlberg was in a movie they released recently. And I heard it made like $1 million.
Dude, that's so
like
crazy.
Insane.
That reminds me, some comic said that they went on the Tonight Show and they got like 8 Instagram ads, like new followers from the Tonight Show. Like I looked at somebody's set recently that performed like, I don't know, like 6 months ago. It had like 49,000 views on the internet. I mean, who knows how many people watch it that night, but probably less than 1 million. It's like not even that big of a deal.
I'm trying to think when, because I read something about that. Someone wrote an article about how those late night spots and all that stuff just completely became just irrelevant, like maybe 5-6 years ago, where they just, you know, it's, I'm not saying it's bad. It's just like for a while, the template was those would help your career immensely in comedy. But now it's just it's not really going to do anything. So people who are still obsessed with getting late night spots, it's just kind of, that's really sort of, you're kind of barking up the wrong tree. It's not really going to do much. Someone else said that to me. Someone, I think it might have been Anthony Jeselnik or someone, this was like 10 years ago, and they said that they did, I think it was the Tonight Show, and they said they got like 10 Twitter followers, and it was like...
Even that long ago? That's crazy.
Yeah, it was a while ago. This was like 10 years ago, I think. And... Because I remember, I think I tried to get a late night spot like years and years ago. And then I just remember, I was like, why am I trying? You know, first of all, it's really hard to get. And it's like, I'm like, why am I spending so much energy getting somebody I don't really even want and like isn't really going to do anything? You know what I mean?
Yeah, you might be able to use it as a foray into getting an audition at a comedy club or booked for road work by a club booker who would, you know, see that as a laudable achievement. But for the most part, generally speaking, broader American public, what, it's only going to have a limited effect, right?
Yeah, and I mean, if you're doing the Tonight Show to get more club work. I mean, what? I don't want to, like, that's first of all, I don't want to do that. And then, like, I remember I heard that years ago, people would do half hour specials, and they were like, "Well, you know," and I was like, "Are these really good for you? Like, what do they do?" And people are like, "Well, you can get more road work." And I was like, "I don't really do the road. I don't want to do the road. Like, it's kind of like, oh, well, what if I, you know, do this thing? You know, if I go to medical school, and they're like, "Oh, well, you can get a job at the DMV." You know, it's like, well, why would I spend all this time to go somewhere I don't want to fucking go?
Yeah, I think I would only want to do road work if it was my primary source of income to do road work. But if I had a day job and I was like schlepping to different cities every weekend, like, fuck that. That's, plus my day job is really challenging and time intensive and demanding. Adding that on top of that, that is not appealing to me. And maybe that's to my detriment, because maybe I should be pursuing those road dates more. But I mean, I would just stick to like open. I'm opening for Julio next week in Tampa. I opened for Ricky in Denver last year. Like, I'll just stick with that, like the piecemeal things here and there, you know.
You don't need, I don't even know what that is anymore, road work and stuff, because first of all, you know, it's all about social media and followers and stuff, and like that's how you're gonna get booked. Like, they're not gonna so I remember even when I was like in the thick of comedy and like road work was more of a thing, people were always like, "You gotta do the road." And I was like, "I don't want to do the road." Like, I did it a little bit, but I remember I made a decision where people were like, "Well, I mean, I make, you know," some people were like, "Well, I make my living as a comedian. You know, I do the road." And, you know, the thing is, like, their lives were miserable. They were constantly just trying to get these shitty bookings at these shitty clubs in the middle of shitty towns. And I was like, you know, I'd rather just have like a job that was like maybe an easy job that I didn't hate, and then just do comedy on my own terms. You know what I mean? Instead of like having comedy, you know, because people, you know, would kind of brag about like, "Well, I make my living at comedy." I'm like, yeah, but you don't really make a good living and your life's a nightmare. So like, what is the point of that? You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather live a life I like and do comedy when I want to do it and the way I want to do it, and not be at the mercy of comedy. You know what I mean? Because even if you're headlining every weekend, which most comedians are not going to be able to do, you're going to be making like $50,000 a year. Is that good?
Are you serious? Is that low?
Well, just think about it. If you're headlining, maybe making $1,000 a weekend at average.
Don't you think like Sam Morril, Mark Norman, those types of guys are making more than that every weekend?
I mean, I think they're making more, but they're not like your typical...
I see.
They're like the high end. They're like the highest.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's not a lot of Sam Morrills and Mark Normans. So, like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, a comedian who's doing okay, you're not going to headline usually. And even if you are, it's just like, I did The Road a little bit. It didn't pay me that much. I didn't really like it. I didn't get much out of it. I wasn't making my comedy better. I was making it worse because I was in front of crowds that were dumb and I didn't want to be around. It was just like not.
You're so arrogant.
Why? Because people are stupid?
I disagree with you.
That people are dumb?
Yeah, well, what I think saying that is an indication of being dumb because it's a broad blanket statement, and those are rarely, almost never true.
That
you're revealing your own ignorance rather than these alleged audiences' ignorance.
My ignorance? I did comedy shows in front of people. They were not. I would talk about something nuanced and smart, and they didn't understand what I was saying. So,
well, maybe the joke wasn't written well enough yet.
And I'm not really.
I'm fucking with you.
But I'm not really even like a some highbrow, complicated comedian. I'll talk about whatever. I have an immature sense of humor. There's not a lot of sophisticated. You know, my book is about the alt scene, and that's kind of what that represented was a lot of comedians who kind of had different styles, and it was sort of a backlash to the kind of stale style of comedy that had come before it, which I think was a lot of like road type comedy. Because alt comedy was always kind of like shit on. They're like, well, they're not doing jokes. But all it was is that they were talking about maybe more obscure things and maybe taking a little longer to get there.
Which is a welcome development from like the old like Catskill days, like Take My Wife, Please kind of act.
Well, that's
right?
What I mean. I feel like The Road is borderline. I don't, you know, that's like a cliche and a joke. But if you do The Road, you see comedians and they're like that. They're basically like Take My Wife, Please. So, I mean, and the people would argue. I remember when I early on, people were like, you got to do, you know, do whatever you can, do any comedy, which I think is true to a point. But if you're doing bad rooms and you're early in your comedy career, you're going to develop an act that's hack because that is what works in those rooms. And, you know, you need to keep getting booked. And if you bomb like once or twice, they're just like, we're not booking you anymore. So it's kind of like you do have to develop an act that's going to work in front of not very sophisticated crowds.
Or just be a more experienced comic that can handle any and all crowds with their level of sophisticated humor, right? You know what I mean? Like today, you wouldn't have that issue because you're better than you were back then.
I guess so. Yeah. But I mean, I would still have to like, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm better. I think I'm better because I'm more, I just kind of don't, I'm not trying as hard to please people, which I think makes you more appealing as a comedian, you know what I mean? Instead of, I think my main gripe with stand-up comedy isn't even like joke. Now that I watch it, I see what I really hate is like the disingenuousness of it. Like when someone is so clearly just kind of reciting jokes and seems very disconnected and not really there, that's what seems the most. That's what and I think there's so much of it now that most people are. Like, I feel like most people, when I see them do comedy, when I see all these clips, it's like they all look like carbon copies of other comedians. Like, it's like everyone learned to do comedy by watching these Instagram videos. So they're all the same, you know what I mean? Which I get because that's how you're learning to do it. But it's just like boring to me. I don't know.
I know. But these comics that have been around the New York scene for like 15, 20 years, and they just found six pieces of spaghetti that stuck to the wall, and they repeat those six pieces of spaghetti over and over and over and over again, just so that they can get the attention that they need to subsist and feel alive at the cost of being growing and the cost of other comics having to watch you repeat the same jokes every single fucking time. It really bothers me.
Well, the thing about that, whenever those people,
distancing myself from that emotionally. What?
No, it does. I mean, that's one of my pet peeves in comedy.
I hate it.
Is people who never write new jokes. I cannot.
Well, what is the fucking point?
The thing that baffles me about it though is like how they can do it, because it's like,
yeah,
that is so. If you're going to do that, sad, and you're just going to do the same act over and over and make your living that way on the road, go fucking do something else. Like, that's not being creative. Like,
no.
I understand if you're like, well, I'm an artist and I'm creative. It's like, okay, but you're not you're taking a creative job and turning it into a rote, boring job. Like, you might as well be a fucking plumber if you're doing that. I don't really, it's weird to see. And it's weird to see people who like pick creative fields who aren't creative doing it. That's such an odd paradox to me. So I know when I do jokes over and over, I just can't, I need to write. I remember people who used to always make comments like, man, you always have new material to me, you know? And like, I can't believe you read it. And I was like, yeah, because I'm just bored. Like, I don't want to go up and just like, it almost feels like cheating if you go up and just do the same. And believe me, I'm guilty. I've gone up in front of crowds and I'm like, I'm just going to do these jokes that are going to kill. But
yeah, of course. There's times when you need to do that.
Yeah. But then like, when people will be like, oh man, you were so great. Part of me is like, I feel like I cheated. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, yeah, but I kind of went in there like it was kind of a loaded machine gun. So I didn't really do anything.
Right. One thing I hate is like, not hate, but like sometimes a comic will come up to me and be like, hey, I really like that one joke. And it's like a joke that I've been doing for 11 years versus the like 3 to 4 newer ones I was working on. Like, I'm always like in my head, I'm like, I'm sincerely grateful, but I'm like, God damn it. I wish you would have said he liked one of the newer ones or she liked one of the newer ones. But that's kind of like the nature of the game, where your older jokes are more established and probably more likely to receive a compliment than your newer stuff you're still working out, right?
And so now when I do comedy, I almost feel like it's like a challenge. Like, I'm like, I'm going to go up and like just do all these like new jokes just to see if I can do it. You know what I mean? Like, it almost feels like a game, because I don't do it as much anymore. And so when I do it, I don't have a lot riding on it. So I'm like, I'm not like, God, I hope I do well and they'll book me again. I'm like, well, I'm just going to like do this. And a lot of times I do well because I think like the audience can pick up on that. Like, someone who's just kind of like completely in the moment and kind of, you know, like is very engaged in what's happening, not just kind of on autopilot. You know what I mean? That's one thing I really never liked about comedy. It felt very like, oddly, this is like performative, but in a bad way, like autopilot-y, like a monologue.
It should never be a monologue.
Just, yeah, like that. I think that's why I always tried to be loose with it, because I never wanted to sound like it was pre-set up, or you know what I mean, like predetermined.
There can be a frequent tendency amongst LA comics to have that kind of performative. It's almost like a one man or one woman show. And then it's like, okay, well, this isn't a one person show. This is an interaction. Stand up is a communication between the performer and the audience. It's not a recitation. It's not a monologue.
Right. Because acting,
it's not an act. It's
right.
Because
when you're doing a monologue and acting in theater, it's like the audience isn't supposed to be there. So
yeah,
you're blocking them out. But in stand up, it's, I don't know. That, like I said, whenever I will watch it now, I'm always like, yeah, that looks very over rehearsed and overly phony, kind of.
But you're not like that, and great comics aren't like that.
No, I'm not. But I, you know, and a lot of times crowds don't respond well to it. Like, they want that a lot of times. A lot of those comedians will kill. I see them kill all the time. But it's weird. I almost feel like killing is like secondary now. Like, if people who are like, look at me, I killed, it's like, well, I mean, but it's not good.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a weird
point where these 7 jokes kill, but then what? So what?
It's such an odd thing.
So what?
Such an odd opinion and viewpoint for me to say that, like, where it's like, the last thing I think about in comedy is like how someone's doing, you know what I mean? If they're getting laughs. I mean, I want to get laughs, and like, I don't like it when I don't, but you know, when I would record myself a lot, I would do sets and I wouldn't do well. And then I'd watch it and I'd be like, wow, this is really funny. They're just not into it, but it's not bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I just want to say one thing, a corollary to the comic that gets 6 pieces of spaghetti, throws them to the wall and repeats them for 15 years is the comic that just only touches surface level topics, like basic identity things, like I'm Jewish. That one comes up a lot. And look, if you have some great jokes about being Jewish, I'm all for it. If that is the entirety of your act, it's like, come on, there's got to be more to you than just that. Are you only your basic identity or your core identity? I'm not, you know, disparaging that, but is that all that you are? Aren't you a thinker? Don't you have relationships? Haven't you made mistakes in the past? Don't you have aspirations?
Yeah. See, that
don't
was
you have what stories and, to tell. Like, is it just that?
And that was a big 80s trope, you know, like it was very like, you know, it became very hack and, you know, where people would be like, I'm half this and half this. And that means, yeah. So, which is a very, beginnery kind of thing and very, yeah, surface level. And I think
I hate that.
Those are the kind of jokes that, like, in the alt scene, that's what they were rebelling against, was like, don't do like the thing that the industry wants you to do where it's, I'm this or I'm that. And like I said, people would do those jokes because they were learning it from watching people do that over and over. So, like, that's why I feel like a lot of, with Instagram and the internet, you people have so much access to see all these comedians now that they'll copy them a lot more aptly and will do a good job of copying them, but they're not original or good. You know what I
feel
mean?
Like stand-up should be a reflection of the rest of life and that you should be learning and growing and experimenting and trying new things. And if you're just latching on to two or three surface level topics and that's it, then that's just kind of like sad to me.
Yeah. And I've seen it a lot. You see it a lot with comedians who, like, even good ones where they'll get to a certain level, not level, but they'll get to a certain place and skill level of comedy and they're good, but then they don't go anywhere. That's a weird one to watch. I've seen that a lot, especially with people I kind of started out with. Like, I knew some people that were really good early and I was like, wow, they're really good. And like, they're better than me. And then I would watch them years later and they were the same. And so now they weren't that good. So it was kind of like, oh, you kind of were good early on, but you just kind of rested on that. You know what I mean? You didn't explore it. And I think that what you have to do is like sort of throw it all out the window at times. And you really have to take risks. And I think that that's a big thing about alternative comedy that I really like. And I think why it connected with a lot of people is it was a lot of people taking risks when a lot of comedians were not taking risks. And so that thrived in that environment. Like, that was kind of the whole, almost a requirement. Like, you better go out there and take some risks because you weren't worried about killing. You know what I mean? It was like, it was almost hack to kill, you know, a little bit.
That's a great way to reframe, you know, the common perception of alt comedy, that it's like this elitist, snobby, we're in Brooklyn and we don't need laughs. But it was also a, you know, an improvement on these hack tropes that were dominating, right?
Yeah. And I mean, that's why I think maybe it's like anything. Maybe people took a little too far about, I don't care about laughs. Because, I mean, if you're up there and you're doing comedy, you do care about laughs. But I think part of it was, look, I'm just going to do this. I don't know how you're going to react. I'm not, you know, it might bomb. But, and I do feel like when I was in that environment, it made me a lot more relaxed to take those risks. And fortunately, usually I didn't want to bomb. It would go over well. So, but you know, I did a room one time early on in like Times Square. There's like a shitty room and it was a bad crowd. And like, I think I did bad once and they like never booked me again. It's like, oh really? So that's it. Like, I didn't do that great for 5 minutes. So it's over.
Yeah. You mentioned that last time we potted together that, yeah, you're like, oh, I went first. And then later in the show, they were warmed up and had a couple of drinks. But that was your one take on me. And you're just like, oh, that guy, he must not be good. Because of the spot in the lineup, you got that one show out of the thousands you've done.
Right. And I remember one time, this was like 4 years ago, this guy, I'm not going to say who it is. He ran a room and he would be like, he would only pay like one person on the show, and that was like the person went last, who maybe did like 15 minutes and the other people maybe did like 10. And I was like, hey, can I go on last and you pay me, you know? And he was like, yeah. And he booked me once and I went up and like, he wasn't even there, the booker. And I remember like, I don't think I did bad. Like, I thought it was fine. Like, I did fine. And then I was like, hey, can I do the show again? Like, and he was like, yeah, I heard like you didn't do that well. So like, you know, can you like, I forgot what he said, like, can you make sure you do your best stuff so that you do well? And it's like,
that's a little painful,
but it's also like, what are you talking about? Like, yeah. Like, hey, it's such a weird thing to be like, hey, can you make sure you do well? Like,
yeah,
can you know what? No, terrible, I can't guarantee that I'm going to do well on the comedy show. And I mean, it's insane for you to think sucking. That. What?
Yeah. But it's, I'm sorry, like, but I suck, so I can't.
But the thing is, this guy knew me. You know what I mean? He'd known me for years. It wasn't like he knew I was good. So it's just kind of like, hey, can you not be bad? It's just like, and I was like, and I look, I know when I'm not doing well, like I'm, you know, because I'm standing there and they're not laughing. So I'm very sensitive to that. I was like, did I do bad? And then I was like, who told this guy that I did bad? And I remember I just never fucking asked him to do it again. I was kind of like, really? Because it wasn't even like a lot of money. It wasn't even that great a show. And I just thought it was such a weird, like, you know, I wanted to be like, yeah, no, I tried to do, I wanted them to laugh. I mean, and I think they did, but, you know, okay. You know, and I almost wanted to be like, can you make sure you have crowds that are like not stupid? And yeah. Know what comedy is.
Can you improve the quality of your venue, and then I'll.
Can you get people who actually know what's good?
Wait, I just want to. We have like what, 7 minutes left?
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I just want to mention two quotes to your earlier point about audiences being dumb. These are the quotes that I always bring up when comics say this. Okay, this is from Del Close, the you know, the famous improv.
Yeah, the guy guru. Who doesn't do stand up. Yeah.
He says, play to the top of your intelligence. If you treat the audience like poets and geniuses, that's what they will become. See, if again, you're writing them off in your mind, then you're creating that milieu for yourself. What?
He was also an improv guy, but okay.
I mean, it's performing arts.
It's not. Those are really not. Improv and stand-up are very different art forms, I think.
I think that audiences can use their intelligence to take in sophisticated improv just as well as they can use their intellect to take in sophisticated stand-up.
I don't know. I feel like improv is a very, people who are audiences that are into improv, it's a very specific thing they're going for. So I think if people who go to an improv show, you have to be into it. You know what I mean? It's like going to see, you know, Cirque du Soleil, something very specific that I feel like stand up, everyone just kind of associates with like stand up. Oh yeah, I can go watch some clown just stand there. And improv, I don't think is, I feel like it is almost a little more sophisticated in,
that's
in
true.
Terms of,
that's true.
In terms of audience.
You have to really hold a story in your mind while you're
improv,
watching.
Improv places, improv groups don't just show up in bars and start doing improv, usually.
Yeah. Okay, and then the second quote from Adam McKay, audiences are way smarter than people give them credit for. What about that? What about that, pal? Because everybody's like, oh, the crowds are dumb. So. That's just, I disagree with that, man. I mean, I think most people are born with a relatively similar level of intelligence. And if they've got money to go to a comedy show, they probably have their life somewhat together. To assume that the audience is dumb, I think is like short-sighted, unfair, and wrong.
So what you're saying I'm short-sighted and wrong for
that's correct.
Crowds are dumb.
I'm sure that there are some
also,
crowds
I don't know,
somewhere
isn't
that are
Adam
dumb,
McKay
for the most
some,
part.
Like, isn't Adam McKay like a... He's probably talking about his movie audience. I don't think he doesn't really do stand up. So
I knew you were going to bring that point up.
But you mean the point that is completely on the nose?
That dooms my point.
You mean the apt counterpoint? Well, I mean,
people watching various forms of entertainment are audiences.
I understand those quotes, but they're both referring to different mediums of comedy. Like,
so for stand up, those two quotes don't apply at all.
There's I don't think no that parallel. They apply as much. I think in terms of film, I think he's clearly a great, you know, filmmaker and director. And I think that that's what he's referring. I think a lot of movies, they try to dumb it down to a crowd, to the masses. I think it's different when you're in the middle of like wherever the fuck. And I think stand up. The problem is like, I think it is a an art form that doesn't get a lot of respect. And I think it's because a lot of people don't treat it with respect. And so I don't think it's looked at as anything by audiences. I think a lot of people look at stand-up as like, well, what's he doing? He's just talking. It doesn't look like anything to anyone. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I think it looks like something that, you know, people are like, I could do that. He's not doing anything. It's kind of like, remember when the Oscars, they had like James Franco and what's her face? Anne Hathaway host.
Yeah.
I thought, and then they went up and they just were bad. And it was like, people seem so shocked, but it was like, well, why would they be good? Like, they're not funny. They're not stand up. So it's kind of,
yeah.
And I think that their attitude when they did that was like, well, what, I mean, it's just talking. They'll just go up there and they'll just say some, we'll write some things and they'll be fine. But it's like, no, there's more to it. You need to have like a sense of a crowd and, you know, what to do if it's not going well. You know what I mean?
There's a craft.
There's chops that you need to have that not, if you haven't done it, you're not going to have. So,
yep.
Like I said, I think that's why it doesn't get respect. I think like if you're really funny, which is probably the hardest thing in the world to do, I think people look at it as like an unsophisticated thing.
Yep.
This is
slightly on. Yeah, I'm yawning. This is Jesus, Tom. This is slightly off topic, but there's some parallels. Lynn Coplitz has this great joke about when she goes on stage. She feels like all the guys in the room look at her and go, boy, that stripper sure is chatty. Like, it's just a woman standing there. How could this be art? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that like, you know, it's funny. I was once emceeing a show and she was on. And I was in the green room and it had been like 2 minutes as I brought her on. And I was just in the green room and she walks into the green room and I was the MC and I just brought her on and she was in the green room. And I'm like, what's going on? What?
You're like, why are you here?
I'm like, what's going on? So what's happening in the show? Like, and she was like, I can't do it. I can't, that crowd, I'm not going to do that. And so I had to run out because she
Holy
like,
shit.
I don't know what had happened, but I guess they had been kind of rude and she just walked off like, fuck you. And so I had to go out.
Damn.
And I think I like calmed them down and then brought her back on.
No shit. Good job, dude.
Not calm, but I was like, hey, will you guys like, you know, and people were like, yeah, bring her back out. I don't know. I don't even know how bad they were, but don't know. I kind of respect that a little bit. Like, you know what? If you're not respecting me, like, fuck off. I'm not doing this, which I would like that more than a comedian who's just kind of like, oh, please, please like it. I don't know. So
Yeah. It's confident.
And also, like, I don't know, like, I think people are, you're looked down a little bit as like a comedian. Like, if you, the audience sometimes feels like it's like part of it is like insulting you and like, yeah, shut up, you know, like heckling is part of it. And it's like, no, I'm fucking doing something. It's rude for you to just scream at me.
The way you talk is so funny.
But you know
why
what
are
I mean?
You like screaming at me, dude. I'm trying to talk.
But like I would do it with crowds. Like they would yell and stuff and talk. And I'm like, look, this is rude. Like I don't like I'm you know, all right, I get it. Like you think this is stupid and nothing, but it's like I'm not just gonna like if you insult me, I'm not just gonna take it.
Yeah. I guess we better wrap on that note.
Okay. Well that was
audience
good.
Is being rude to you. What are your handles?
Oh, at Tom McCaffrey 722 on Instagram, and then please, yeah, buy my book Born Funny. It's on Amazon. It was got to like the top 20 on the bestseller chart.
That's amazing! Congrats, bro.
Thanks,
more success
man.
To you.
Thank you. You too. Yeah,
thanks for listening, y'all. I'm Danny Palmer NYC on Instagram. Send me a note. No one ever does. And Black Cat every Friday night 9:00.
Okay,
you come cool. Perform again, dude. Last week. Was
yeah, killer. Yeah, I do. Yeah, thanks.
I'll hit you up, dog. Okay. All right, bye, y'all.
Bye, peace, geez, man. Thanks.
I like to say comment.